Welcome to the Keys of the Kingdom with Brother Gregory of His Holy Church.
Well, welcome to Keys of the Kingdom. I'm Brother Gregory, and we're going to talk about the Kingdom of God. And we're going to talk about a lot of different things here today, and I actually have shifted the topic a little bit a couple of times of what I thought I was going to talk about, and I often do that during the show itself, but I heard about this internet neutrality, and I haven't really read it all. It was one of those deals where Congress was supposed to pass it. You have to vote on it before you can read it kind of thing. Which is, you know, the absolutely insane. It shows you how out of control things are. But our interest in it is to learn how to not be out of control ourselves. And to do that, sometimes we have to look at the rest of the world and see what they're doing so we know not to do that. I used to tell people that even a foolish old man was wiser than most young men, because in him is written all the mistakes that you don't want to make. And so if you will learn from that old man, you will not necessarily have to make all his mistakes. But in looking at the names, I was at somebody else's house the other day, and then the subject came up, and I said, you know, there's a lot of different ways that governments name bills and laws that they want to pass in order to make them more attractive to the general population. Because if you've read Lycurgus's opinion of government, the idea of a democracy was to give the people a sense of control while somebody else actually ran things behind the scenes. And that was written thousands of years ago. So that it's certainly not a new idea to people who are political pundits in any country. If you're going to create offices of power, men who seek power will seek office, and they will rule over you. But they're going to have to make you feel like your voting makes a difference. And like one person said, if voting actually made a difference, they wouldn't let us do it. And that's probably true, because when you have a government that's wielding around billions of dollars and the equivalent power that goes along with that, do they really want some private individual or a group of private individuals making major choices for them? You know, in a lot of the communist countries, they solve the problem. They have, you know, the official candidate, and he's the only one running, and that's who you have to vote for. And you go down and vote, even though there's only one person running. And they do that, and somehow or other people think, well, yeah, we voted for him. But it's a complete exercise in futility. At least in some countries, they have multiple parties, and you can go down and vote for the person of your choice. But in the reality, after watching elections for almost 60 years now, I don't really see that the choice really makes much difference. But still, they got to make you feel good about it. So they have things like the Internet Neutrality Act, and what that actually will mean. And I haven't even read the bill, but I can tell you, because I understand human nature, what it really means is neutralizing the Internet Act. So the Internet has been a means by which to get information out that you would not hear or see otherwise. Now, one of the ways to prevent that information to having its full impact is to create all kinds of other false information out there that would keep people from actually finding the truth. that you barrage the people with all kinds of crazy accusations or theories or what have you, so that they cloud the issue and you have to fish through all these different things. But what was happening was that certain people were being found out to be reliable and others were not. Another phenomenon that I was going to talk about, we're not going to get into detail about, is a phenomenon of how the mind works. And we're going to talk a lot more about that in the future. But because knowing how that tool, the mind, works, will forearm you to be less manipulated by other people who know how it works and manipulate your thinking. A fellow down in Australia once, he taught an actor how to pretend to be channeling the information from a 2,000-year-old dead spirit or prophet, and he named him, and they did this, and they filmed it, and they did it kind of as an experiment, but they almost immediately told people that they were, you know, this guy's an actor, and he's putting this all on, he's making this all up. And but people still, when they were told by the guy that he was acting, that he was just making this up, it was just kind of a study in how this all works, there were all kinds of people who continued to believe that he actually was channeling the ideas of someone who's been dead for 2,000 years, this dead spirit. And I can't remember the people's names now, but we'll talk about it more in detail later. They could not give up the idea of what they had been listening to was completely made up, even though the people who put it all together absolutely said, we just made it up. And this wasn't something that went on for a real long time. This was something that was just a very short-lived thing. And these people were starting to make a complete religion out of this guy's mumblings. And they could not go back. Once they had accepted the idea, they could not go back. So now if you accept a particular political party, and I see this all the time, and I really don't care whether it's Republican or Democrat or constitutionalist or whatever, but once you accept certain ideas, like say the idea that the Constitution is the secret to the success of the United States, or the prosperity of America is the result of the Constitution of the United States. Once you accept that premise, somebody comes along and shows you unquestionably that it is not, that there's something else moving in society that makes it either great or foolish or wise or wicked. It is hard to let go of what you have once accepted. Also, a great deal of the reasoning and rationale that people have is not all that logical. It's kind of, you know, one of my grandsons, he does math problems, long division, and he has learned to do them in his head. And you don't see him working it out on the paper. And he's accurate, but he just says it's simpler. He's cut out all these other processes that his mother was trying to teach him. And he says, well, I can just see that that is this and this is this. And other of the kids, they still go out the long process. But this one has the talent of not needing that. He can do it all in his head. And to him, it's simpler. Well, he's getting the right answer, but in complex reasoning, you can come to conclusions because you make little jumps in logic. You see this piece of information and that piece of information, and you just assume that it's true, that your conclusion is accurate, even though when you actually analyze it out, because it's not dealing with math, it's not as clear. It's not as obvious as it would be for other situations and people to look at that and come to the same conclusions. We're going to look at some of these things. And before I go on, when I was looking up all these names of bills, there was actually a bill: revoke excessive policies that encroach on American Liberties Act. That's actually the name of a bill. And of course, that becomes Repeal Act if you take the first letter of each of those words. And it was, you know, kind of targeting the present president's health care system. And they were going to try to undo it. And then they had another RAINS Act, which is regulation from the executive in need of scrutiny. And of course, that was a Republican-sponsored bill. And I noticed that a lot of the bills lately have been very partisan. And the names tell you right out that these are partisan bills. You know, there was a Democratic one written: repealing ineffective and incomplete abstinence-only program funding act. So that, you know, they had these big, long, complicated names. And that's another trend that I've seen recently that, well, not just recently, that they go back. There was one that was, well, there was one called the BOSS Act, and it was better oversight of secondary sales and accountability in concert ticketing. And it becomes the BOSS Act. And somebody liked the boss phrase there, but the whole act is about, you know, people reselling tickets to concerts. And it stemmed from the fact that I guess there was a lot of overpricing of some Bruce Springsteen concert, and it got enough press that somebody wrote up this act. Meanwhile, the really meaty laws, that usually when you see these things, they're just show. They're just one political party trying to make everybody know that, oh, we're working for you, we're trying to make, you know, concert tickets cheaper, we want you to be able to go to that circus cheaper, and, you know, we're out here working for your benefit. And it's all just political posturing. There was one that was called no private contract to be negotiated when a patient is buck naked act. That's actually the official name of the act. And it had to do with the fact that, you know, patients were often being coerced into signing agreements with hospitals while they were ill, while they were, you know, being examined and stuff. And a person is kind of vulnerable to agreeing to things that he normally wouldn't agree to because he's in this, you know, debilitated state, including sometimes being naked and having somebody come in with a clipboard saying, do you agree to this? You know, and they just want to get you out of the room. So they created that no private contract to be negotiated when the patient is buck naked act. And unfortunately, it was introduced by Pete Stark, who is a Democrat, and it became known as the Stark Naked Act. But this is the kind of shenanigans that you see going on in politics, because it's really a show. It's really, most of what you see is entertainment to make you feel like, you know, something really is going on. But we do see this other trend, like the Internet Neutrality Act, which really is about neutralizing the effectiveness of the Internet, because you may end up, you know, having to get a license to even have a website. And if you can make enough rules that almost any website would have to go down. I mean, you got people who have flower shops who very gently and kindly had sold flowers to gay people, but did not want a supply of flowers for a gay wedding because they found that immorally reprehensible. And they took the person's hand and they said, oh, you know, I'm sorry, I just can't do this in good conscience because I don't think that gay marriage is good for society, it's good for the individual. I think it's actually detrimental. And I can't be a part of something like that, that I believe is actually doing harm to both the world and society. I mean, she didn't explain all that out, but she was very gentle about it. Well, the people who weren't getting able to get flowers there, but could have got them from hundreds of other places, decided to take this person to court and sue them personally and their business and destroy their business and make an example of them, which is actually a hate crime to do that. They're using the law because they hate this woman's opinion of certain unnatural activities that are actually, she considers to be detrimental to society and even to the individuals. And so they're legally committing a hate crime against her by charging her with a hate crime, which she clearly was not committing. And they're going to devastate her, you know, financially. Hopefully, that's their intent for voicing her opinion and acting upon it. You see, they're the ones who are intolerant. They want to actually, she wasn't running somebody out of business. She wasn't burning a cross in their lawn. She wasn't, you know, attacking them. She wasn't trying to hurt them in any way. She just, you know, she couldn't do that in good conscience. But she's not allowed that good conscience because somebody passed a bill or a law or an act. And somebody else vindictively wants to destroy her business for her religious opinion. And they're actually committing a terrorist hate crime through the courts. But all the Christians are still singing in their churches because they're not really interested in the weightier matters of law, judgment, mercy, and faith. They let that go on. But now, I was going to talk about some other act, Patriot Act. There's a nice little simple name. Sounds great, Patriot Act. And it actually stems out of the Domestic Anti-Terrorist Act, which was first introduced by Senator Biden about 6 months before it came up for a vote. But it came up for a vote the day after the Muir building was blown up. And the first words out of the president's mouth was, at that time, which was Bill Clinton, was that if Congress would pass my Domestic Anti-Terrorist Act, I'd have the tools to deal with this. And of course, they did pass it, but then there was still 9/11. So he didn't have the tools. So then they had to pass the Patriot Act. The fact is those acts, there's a lot of work that goes into writing those acts. They're not, you know, they're not just show. They want these acts passed. And the powers that be orchestrate ways into making that happen, and they get public support other ways. But what we're really looking at is a certain spirit that is alive and well in the universe and working daily and nightly, in other words, in the dark, in the shadows, including the shadows of your mind, which will be a topic again. We talked a little bit about that last week, but we're going to talk about it more in the future. But this shadow, we part of your mind that is affected by the stuff that goes on, allows that spirit to operate in the world because you accept certain ideas. And no matter what anybody says, you won't let go of them. You think there is a political solution to changing the world. And there's an old saying, I think it might have been Gandhi, I can't remember who it was who said it, but it's true. Before governments will change, men must change. And so if you really want to affect change in the world, and I think this was probably Gandhi too, although I heard it recently on a comedy show that was filmed by the BBC, is that you have to be the change you want to be in the world. You have to change. You have to be something different. And this, of course, is really at the essence of what Christ was doing. Christ did not come to get, you know, run for Caesar's position. You know, Caesar was elected. Augustus Caesar was elected to office by an electoral college. Same with the most of the Caesars for the following his particular stint in office. He had taken an oath of office. It was a 10-year term as emperor. He actually carried three different offices because of the interest in a division of power that rose up at that time. It had been discussed at that time. And, of course, that's what they discussed at the time that they wrote the Constitution of the United States, which actually created a government very, very similar to that of the Roman Empire, which didn't come about as an empire until the demise of the Republic. Most people don't know it, but we had a republic in America before the Constitution of the United States. We had presidents in America before the Constitution of the United States. George Washington was not the first president. He was the first president under the Constitution of the United States. But we had presidents before that. At least seven, I think, I can remember. But most people don't know that because they went to public school, which we didn't have hardly any of at that time. Until the early 1900s, most people were not educated in public schools, and most public schools were locally controlled because most public schools were privately funded by local communities and not by taxing everybody. Most people have no knowledge of that. And why would they tell you? Why should you have that? You see, what really made America great was the willingness to sacrifice, to serve, and to volunteer to help and be there for your neighbor. People were Minutemen. They were Minutemen long before the Indians attacked. They were Minutemen when there were droughts. They were Minutemen when there was floods. They were Minutemen when there were fires. They dropped what they were doing and they came to help their neighbor. When the neighbor was sick, when he was injured. When anything like that happened, people came to each other's aid. They were involved in their local community. They were their local community. They didn't elect some government to do things for them. And they knew that they had to do it this way because they knew as long as we look to government to solve our problems, we will always suffer tyranny. They knew that because that was something said by somebody in government at that time, back in the 1700s, William Pitt. He was actually in the English government, and he actually was defending what the Americans were doing here in America because he knew and understood that America was already a republic long before 1776. There are actually troops sent to America under Cromwell to defend the American Republic. That's what he says, to defend the American Republic. We didn't become a republic because somebody imposed the Constitution on us. We were a republic because of the nature of our society. And we don't know that anymore. We think that, oh, government needs this act or that act or do this or get this guy elected and things will get better. But we're looking in the wrong direction. We have to look at ourselves. And that's what we're going to do. We're going to take a look at how a really free government operates, because that's what Christ came to teach you how to do. We'll be back in a minute.
You can find His Holy Church all over the world. It consists of men and women seeking the kingdom of God and His righteousness, seeking to love their neighbor as themselves, seeking to forgive one another. If you want to become a part of the living network of such people, go to hisholychurch.org. Connect by clicking on the icon of the man, with the net and joining the network in your area. There are men and women waiting there to help you connect with others seeking that kingdom of righteousness. The early church, in order to stay in contact, to help one another, to be a blessing to each member of the community, networked all across Europe. They were there during the famines and during the runaway inflation, during the destruction of the Roman Empire. But they were there for each other because they knew each other. And that is so important. In order to love your neighbor, you cannot do that from a pew. You must do that with real connections and real people on the ground where you live. So join the network at hisholychurch.org and become a blessing. If you would like to learn more at hisholychurch.org, we have dozens of booklets, several books that are available that are free for downloading and reading online or printing out in your own PDF format. We also have hundreds of audios that are available there and at keysofthekingdom.info. We also have a Preparing You website that is a wiki site that is constructed by all the members of the network. But the most important thing is to meet people on the ground where you live in your own local communities. Those that are seeking the kingdom of God and His righteousness. The kingdom of heaven is not for the slothful, it is for the diligent. It is for those who seek to do the will of the Father and follow the ways of Christ. Early Israel operated as a network and so did the early church. They did this because disaster can strike almost anywhere. While one congregation may not be able to handle local calamity, multiple congregations networked together can solve almost any problem, whether it be tornado or earthquake or even wars and famines. His Holy Church also operates as a network, and in order to keep that network healthy, we have feasts and festivals in different parts of the country where people can come together and meet each other and shore up those relationships necessary for a free assembly. We have one every fall called the Burning Bush Festival in here in Oregon, and you're more than welcome to come. Get a hold of us on the network. If you want to participate, contact those people in your local network or find out more by going to burningbushfestival.org. God bless.
I'm Brother Justice, and I'm a minister of His Holy Church of Sacramento, California. His Holy Church is a powerful weapon in the hands of God. The books, The Covenants of the Gods, and Thy Kingdom Come has changed the course of my life forever. For those of you who are truly looking for the way, I encourage you to look to His Holy Church at www.hisholychurch.org. May the good Lord bless you and keep you.
So welcome back to Keys of the Kingdom, and the keys of the kingdom are to listen to what Christ had to say. He told us what the keys were. What you bind on earth is bound in heaven. What you loose on earth is loosed in heaven. So be careful what you bind on earth, because you will bind yourself away from the kingdom. This is why in the Old Testament, sacrifice meant to draw near. And that's why Christ calls for love and charity, because love and charity require sacrifice. And, you know, a lot of people think that, well, actually, I just got some emails before the show began, and people were talking about sacrifice, that there's no easy way, that we must sacrifice. Yeah, but there are all kinds of sacrifice. You know, charity is sacrifice. Love is sacrifice. Killing a sheep and setting it on fire, well, that may be sacrifice if you're a sheep herder, but of course that's not what they were doing in the Old Testament. They were giving reins of control of sheep and other items to the ministers of a nation, the government of a nation. The Levites were the government. I mean, where was the government of Israel? It was the Levites. And they couldn't exercise authority one over the other. They couldn't force the contributions of the people. We know that because when they ask for a king, they're told that this guy's going to take and take and take and take. He's going to force. We know that because in the Bible it says you tithe to them according to their service. You choose to tithe who you're going to tithe to and what you consider is the tithing. They don't have the power to force it. But once they got a king, then he could take and take and take, and he would eventually take your sons and the first fruits of your labor and the best of your fields, and he would do them for himself. And he would give you bills to pass to make laws for you. One year I read just about every act that was passed in Congress, and one of them was the Insurance Portability Act. And when I was reading that, I discovered that there's kind of a code within a code, because these are like book-sized laws, huge, giant things. And I noticed that certain concepts, certain ideas that you'd find, you know, pushing back the position of freedom in the world, individual choice in the world, certain types of those regulations within those acts were in certain clauses of the act. And the clauses of the act were not numbered quite the way you would suspect. I mean, there were numbers missing. It wasn't always consecutively numbered. It was because they wanted certain items in certain, under certain numbers, because as soon as this act is passed, somebody's going to codify this law and it's going to become a part of the codes. So all the codes get rewritten every time there's a new act. Well, what will this change? Somebody has to really know the codes, and they have whole teams of people who know this. Well, the guys who write the acts, they know what they're going to change. Another thing that I noticed is that, and I went back and checked this, certain laws would be passed like way back in 1957 concerning something like birth certificates. And at the same time, in European countries, they would pass similar laws that did the same thing with their birth certificates. Way over there in Europe. Now, why would they be making laws? I mean, what's the big controversy? And, you know, I saw it as interesting, but of course I know that that is not where the solution is. And Ronald Reagan said in his first inaugural address, and I'm just quoting these people because these are people in, you know, the secular government, and the church is not in the secular government, but it is a government. It's another form of government where the secular power remains with the people because they remain free. In church government, we don't have any power or control over you. It's like the days of the Levites. The Levites didn't have any power or control. They couldn't make you pay in to support the government. You had to choose to do that. And the reason why you chose is because they were doing a good job. But in secular governments where you bind yourself, you remember what you bind on earth, it's considered bound in heaven. When you bind yourself by making covenants and taking oaths, now they can make you contribute to whoever they want in the amount that they want, and you don't have any say-so in it. But the Levites couldn't do that, and neither can the church, because the church took the place of the Levites. The church is Israel. Now, a lot of people, I can just see the doctrinal issues just popping up all over the country here, and we say that. But you tell me, Jesus says to the Pharisees who were in political control at that time, I mean, Herod's dead. There's no king sitting in Jerusalem. I mean, you got Herod over there, Herod Antipas over there in Judea, but he's not sitting on the throne in Jerusalem. Remember, the kingdom was divided up. They tried to put somebody in place there, not quite as king, but as some sort of a protector. And it didn't last. So there wasn't anybody sitting on that throne when Jesus starts his public career. And he's out there talking about government, talking about how to govern yourselves. And he says, I'm going to take the kingdom away from you, the Pharisees, who are running things. and we're going to give it to another group of men who bear fruit. He says, it is my pleasure to appoint unto you the little flock, this is his disciples. Disciples are students learning to be ministers of Christ's government. And he says, it's my good pleasure to appoint unto you a kingdom. So he's going to take it from this group, he's going to appoint it to that group, and then later on we see in Luke where he said, you know, you've seen the governments of the Gentiles who call themselves benefactors but exercise authority one over the other, talking about those governments, the rulers of those governments. He says, you're not to be that way. You are to be rulers and heads of a government, but you're not to exercise authority one over the other. You're to operate this other form of government, a free government. Now, a free government requires something of the people, but it requires it by its nature. It doesn't require it by someone who exercises authority and forces you to contribute. A free government requires that you choose to contribute and forgive one another and gather together with one another and help one another, care for one another. And that's what made America great, because that's what we were doing. And which is why, you know, Ronald Reagan says in that first inaugural address, the present crisis, in this present crisis, this was back in Reagan's day, first part of his first administration. In this present crisis, government is not the solution to our problems. Government is the problem. Now, that was his opinion. I can't disagree with him any more than I could disagree with William Pitt, who says as long as we look to government to solve our problems, we will always suffer tyranny. These are comparable ideas, complementary ideas that you see repeated by men in governments, one in English government and the other one in the U.S. government. And they're right. And they're talking about solving our problems. Well, if you go back in the Bible and you try to look for, I mean, are you going to find the word solving problems in the Bible? No, but you will find a word salvation in the Bible. And you'll actually find it in the Old Testament. Yeshua. Yeshua. That's the word. Salvation. I mean, you can find it in Exodus, where the salvation of the Lord. They're talking about the salvation of the Lord. And that word salvation appears as salvation about 65 times, but it also appears as the word help 4 times, and the word deliverance 3 times, and the word health 3 times, and save and saving and welfare. It appears as welfare. And it has to do with deliverance and prosperity. It has to do with saving you from troubles. And like I say, it's all over the Old Testament. They had another word that appears as salvation also. And it's a little different. It begins with the letter Tav, which has to do with faith. For those of you who have been studying along with us, understand that the letter Tav, each of the letters in Hebrew means something. And you're dealing with Tav, Shem, Vav, and Hey. And you produce this word Teshua. So it's like Yeshua, but it's Teshua. And it's translated salvation also, and it's also translated deliverance, and it supposedly means salvation and deliverance, but they have this Tav in the front of it. You know, it's also translated into help and safety and even victory. But what it involves, instead of Yeshua, it's Tav Shua, and it has to do with faith. You see, because faith is the mark of God. Tav is the mark of God. and things that show a lack of faith. Lack of faith in what? In God. And what does God want you to do? Love your neighbor as yourself. I mean, Moses said it, Jesus said it, the apostles said it. Not force, not live by the sword, not force your neighbor to contribute to your welfare, to save you, to be your salvation, to make you safe, to deliver you. You're not going to do that with a sword by forcing your neighbor to contribute to your welfare. Your welfare, again, that word that we saw before as salvation is also translated welfare. I mean, David said that what should have been for your welfare had become a snare. Should have been for your salvation. For your deliverance has become a snare. Because you bound yourself. You applied for benefits. You didn't know any better. I mean, your churches weren't telling you what the truth was. They weren't helping you out. They weren't showing you the way. There's another word translated salvation in the Old Testament. I mean, the word salvation shows up all the time. At least 32 times, this other word, yesha. Just yesha. Just three letters. That's kind of almost a root word, yesha. It's translated salvation, safety, saving. It supposedly means safety, welfare, prosperity. You know, it's a noun, but it's from a word, yasha, which is the verb, which means to save, to deliver, to help, to preserve. So where are you looking for your help? Where are you looking for your preservation? Where are you looking for your security? Who are you looking to save you? Who are you calling upon? Are you living by faith? Are you calling upon God? Are you calling upon men who call themselves benefactors but exercise authority? And I don't mind if you want to call on those guys, that's fine. It's not going the way of Christ, though. It's going away from the way of Christ. It's not based on choosing to sacrifice. You will sacrifice. Because we're told in Samuel 8 that he's going to take and take and take and take and take. And you rebels out there, you'll shake your fist and, oh, he's bad, he's wicked. No, he's there on purpose to punish the wicked. Who are the wicked? The slothful, who should be under tribute, according to Proverbs. Who are the wicked? Those who do not come and sacrifice to save their neighbor. Don't care about their neighbor as much as they care about themselves. Oh, they'll send you an email and tell you all kinds of stuff about theology and their eschatology and, you know, their doctrines and their interpretation of doctrines, but they're not going to actually come anywhere and help you. They're not going to actually lay down their life daily like Christ. Christ came to serve. Christ got on his hands and knees and washed people's feet to show you how important service was. The only time you see people doing that in the modern church is some kind of a show, almost entertainment. You know, to make you think that, oh, we're humble. I actually was washing somebody's feet just the other day. And I discovered that the person who was supposed to have been doing that wasn't doing that. And a sore was developing on his feet. And so we did something about it. We not only washed his feet, we prayed over his feet. And we actually saw healing taking place right then. But there are other people who are not going the ways of Christ. And there are individual choices that people have to make. All these difficulties you see in the world today, all these problems you need solving, all these solutions you are looking for in all the wrong places, they're evidence The fact that you haven't been going there. If everybody in America who say they are Christians were actually Christians, were actually doing what Christ said, if everybody who was a Jew says they're a Jew, were actually doing what Moses said. Because I don't see Jews doing what Moses said. Honestly, I don't see any Jews doing what Moses said. Now, I don't see every Jew. There might be some out there that are doing what Moses said. But if they were actually doing what Moses said, and then they saw what Christ said, they would realize that Christ and Moses were in agreement. But I don't even see Christians doing what Christ said. Oh, they're saying, Lord, Lord, but they're not doers of the word. Because if they were, you wouldn't have all these problems. You've been looking in the wrong direction. You're not changing yourself. You're not actually repenting and changing your ways. You're not. Your ways are not the ways of Christ. Now, I'm saying this generally out to every churchgoer that I know. Now, I know in every single church there are people that are not far from the kingdom. I don't know about every church, but because there's a lot of, there's a lot of churches out there. There's thousands of them. And then I heard about the emerging church. That's kind of a new thing. I guess not all that new, but that's an interesting phenomenon. And very reasonable to expect something like that to come along in the impotent church that we have today posing as Christianity. Because they're not doing what Christ said. They're looking to men who exercise authority for their salvation, for their deliverance, for their security. They're not gathering together to serve one another, to bless one another, to help one another. That same word, save, that we see Yasha. Translated 149 times save. It's also translated help. Even more than salvation. I mean, that same word is actually translated salvation 3 times as a verb. I mean, it's translated save, savior, deliver, help, preserved, salvation, avenging, they even translated, defend, rescue. Same word. That's the kind of stuff that's going on in your translations of the Bible in order to, but the fact is if you were really listening to the Holy Spirit, you should be able to figure this out. And I will admit that there's lots of stumbling blocks and it may be a little hard to see, but you should be able to hear my words. I'm making it pretty clear. If you take that word salvation, and we have that page up on preparing you on salvation, and I'll probably expand on it. I actually changed it at the break, added another little bit. I'm constantly, stepping back and going forward and chiseling a little bit more out so you can see the image of the gospel even clearer than the Bible seems to have made it. The Bible did a good job, but, a lot of the ministers and translators, they're not doing quite such a good job. But anyway, in the Greek, you'll see the word soteria. Soteria. It's translated salvation, a bunch of times, 40 times. And saved. And it means deliverance. Preservation, safety, salvation, protection from the deliverance from the molestation of your enemies. It comes from the word soter, which we see translated savior, because that means deliverer and preserver. So who's delivering you from trouble? You're out there trying to elect a deliverer. Did you know that that's what Augustus Caesar was called, the deliverer? The Savior. He was given that title when he was elected to office. You see, but Jesus didn't want that office because that office exercised authority one over the other, compelled the contributions of the people. That's not the form of government that Christ preached. And that's not the form of government that Christians sought. And now you know why they were persecuted. Because they sought a government of the people, for the people, and by the people, operating by faith, hope, and charity, and the perfect law of liberty. Now, those words are all right there in the text, but somehow or other, you don't realize that Christ took the kingdom away from a group of people who were not bearing fruit and gave it to another group of people who were Jews. People said the Jews didn't accept Jesus. What were the apostles, for gosh sakes? What were those thousands there at Pentecost who were accepting Jesus? Thousands one day, thousands the next, and these are probably only thousands of heads of families, elders of families. They're not counting all the kids. They're counting the heads of families. Even the guard there, when he said, "What must I do to be saved?" He says, "Be baptized," which of course was a political choice. "And you and all your family would be saved if this guy got baptized." Now, you might not understand the significance of that statement to get baptized, but anybody who got the baptism of Christ was kicked out of the social welfare system of Jerusalem that was run through all the synagogues. It tells you that in John. So this guy would be kicked out. He would also probably be kicked out of the Temple of Roma if he was using that temple for his social welfare, because that's what all these temples were. Not every temple, but most temples in Rome and everything had something to do with social welfare. Some of the temples were more like stock markets. I mean, the Temple of Ephesus was actually minting coins, which is why you find animal bones and ashes of animal bones there in the temple. It wasn't because they were sacrificing animals. They were minting coins, and there's a way to use ashes from animal bones to decrease the amount of gold in a coin without somebody detecting it. So what you're actually finding is evidence of a crime. So anyway, so what I was going to do, and I'll probably do it in the next show, I'm going to read from a speech given by somebody who was president at one time and then was shot. And we're going to look at what those governments are talking, well, at least what that one individual in government was talking about, and relate that to Christ and what he was talking about. And we've already kind of done that, laying this out, that Christ was giving you a solution, a salvational solution that would deliver you from the bondage of sin and would make you separate, but it was going to require your personal charity, which is another way of saying sacrifice, your personal love for one another, which is another way of saying sacrifice. So we'll talk about that next time on Keys of the Kingdom. Until then, peace on your house. God bless.
You have been listening to The Keys of the Kingdom with Brother Gregory of His Holy Church. For more information on the educational ministry provided by His Holy Church and Brother Gregory, including services, counseling, lectures, books, and other audio materials, please write to His Church at Summer Lake, Box 10, Summer Lake, Oregon, 97640. You can also find us on the web at www.hisholychurch.net.